Aviation Quest is C101, wind 270 degrees, 10 knots, runway 27 left, cleared for takeoff.
Aviation Quest CC101, cleared for takeoff, 27 left. V1, rotate. Positive climb.
Aviation Quest CC. Stories from above. The views shared in this podcast are personal and for informational purposes only. They do not reflect any employer or aviation authority, and nothing discussed here should be considered flight training or regulatory guidance. Please always refer to official sources. This episode may also contain product placement. For further information, visit our website aviation-quest.cc.
Well, Aviation Quest CC episode number 17 is about to begin. I'm your host, Jürgen Reis. And today also joined by my professional pilot friend, Stefan. Hello, Stefan.
Hello, Jürgen. How are you? All good?
Yeah, and I think good on the way. You were quite satisfied. So it seems that there are more and more listeners. So I was a little bit hesitant in, I think, episode 15 it was, or 14. I forgot how many, don't know, one episode after the other. But it seems that you are quite satisfied about listeners, especially on YouTube, on the Aviation Desk Quest podcast channel. It seems there is some increasing statistics going on there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a small channel, but what I can see is we have a loyal base. So once people start listening, they come back over and over again, which is nice to see, because that means that's how you build the community, and that's what we want to achieve, I guess.
So the way is up.
Yes. Well, there's only one way for pilots, and that's up.
Literally speaking. Yeah. What way up is today? We are an audio podcast, but thanks to Stefan's work, we also have a video, so a YouTube channel where you can see a great flight sim video also today in the background of this audio. And what's the flight about today, Stefan?
Yes, so today we are finally doing the flight you were all excited about the last time. We are flying the A330SD, or known as Beluga. So this weird-looking, huge transport aircraft. And we're doing a flight that used to happen, unfortunately not anymore. We're flying from Filton Airfield, where we pick up some parts for Airbus, and we bring them to the Airbus factory in Hamburg, Finkenwerder.
So you transport your plane or something like this, or parts of your plane.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And today, speaking of flight simulation, I think we are already right in the topic. It is part one, and we are planning on three parts. Yeah. Okay. I keep this open. This was one of my mistakes in the early years. Yeah, it was last year where we recorded the first episodes. I keep this open, but we thought about three parts. But let this keep an ongoing project. We start today with flight simulation back then, and already built some bridges to nowadays, but step by step. I think an interesting topic, and certainly also for you, your YouTube channel FS Clips proves it week by week. A great hobby, isn't it? As well as for myself.
I think so, yeah. For me, flight simming has been my hobby for a very, very long time. And even if you're not interested in becoming a real-world pilot, I think it teaches you a lot. You get a huge insight into the industry, especially with modern flight sims, because they've become super realistic. But even if you don't, you know, if you're not into flying airliners exactly like in the real world, you can learn how to fly helicopters, you can do bush flying, you can fly fast jets like an F-15 or an F-18. So literally the sky is the limit, so to say. And so from that point of view, I think it's a great hobby.
I can think of the motto of this podcast being, these were your words in a private conversation when planning this episode, Stefan. If you cannot do it in the real world, you can do it on your PC. I think this was for you, as you told me, so to say, the inspiration to get into the PC flying, because as you already outlined it, you already outlined it in the premiere episode, for years, the cockpit was just not realistic. The real cockpit, I mean.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, that is correct. And so you may wonder, well, now that you're flying in the real world, I fly Airbus, why are you still flight simming? And it's exactly the same motto that you just mentioned, because so when I come home, I don't, if I have time and I go on flight simulator, I don't fly an A320, you know, from A to B, because that's what I do in the real world. I fly, I don't know, like the Beluga today for this podcast, or I fly an MD-11 or Concorde, or I try carrier landings on the with the F-18. So that's the beauty of it. You can try whatever you want. There's no limitations. You can fly a 747 underneath the Golden Gate Bridge or whatever you want. You have all the freedom you want. You can go anywhere in the world. The entire world is simulated. You can visit places maybe you've been to. You can visit places you've never been to. So to me, it's a huge sandbox where you can do lots of exciting stuff.
And I mean, how much into depths you can go is also proven a couple of times or numerous times on your FS Clips channel. I just enjoyed this morning how to correctly shut down an aircraft. Yes, I also did it in a complex manner. But yeah, if you want to see how a real world pilot is shutting down an aircraft in a simulator, it's one of the videos I think that proves how well developed today's simulations are in flight simulation. I think this was this Flight Simulator 2024?
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was the Phoenix A320, which I use as a standard product. There are many other products out there which are similar in terms of depth. Depends what aircraft you want. Since I talk about the aircraft I know best, which is the A320, I use that one. But as you and I know, you know, you can get aircraft from PMDG and from TDFI and all these developers, and a lot of them are just incredibly detailed. You can literally pull circuit breakers and it will do the exact same thing as in the real aircraft. So if this is your thing, if you want to learn how real world airline pilots fly these aircraft and how they operate them, then yeah, I mean, let's be honest, these add-ons are not cheap, but they will give you the full experience, which is quite different from what it was like when you and I started, I guess.
Yeah, I started. I mean, are you ready to fasten seatbelts and go back to the flight adventures of the year? I don't know which year it was. It was either 1987 or 1988. But are you ready?
Yeah. Of course. Let's go.
Because this is an episode I forgot, and I don't know, it almost forgot. But how could I forget? The first time that I really got in touch with flight simulation was on a trade show here in Dormien. It was an IT trade show, and there was an Atari booth. And certainly flight simulations, especially back then, I think they were always perfect showcase scenarios to show about the performance of the computer. And I remember I went on this afternoon to this booth, and there was this flight simulator, and I was there for, I think, at least 2 hours. But I can just say kudos to Atari and this team. The presenter, I think, or the salesperson or whatever they were doing there, he just came to me after 2 hours. I mean, maybe I was also a good presenter for his PC, for his Atari SD, I don't know. But he just kindly asked if I can maybe come back in the late afternoon, and this is what I did, and I came back and played until the trade show closed, and this was my, I was And it was most likely, it was, I'm pretty sure, I've seen a screenshot in a retro gamer magazine, it was the Sublogic Flight Simulator 2. And yeah, later on, there was the Amiga. I already talked about it in the premiere episode. So this was when I was 13. In 1989, there was the Amiga 500 and certainly F-18 Interceptor, F-16 Combat Pilot, and also the Amiga version of this. I think it's a little bit vague, my memories from back then, but I think it was almost the same, or maybe it was the same like on the Atari. But yeah, quite some time gone by. I'm 49 years old now, so take everything I say here with a little bit of retro salt. Yeah, and then I think it was about 6 months later, maybe it was five, there was this afternoon in my parents' house. I still live nearby here. And Stefan showed up.
I did indeed. I didn't have a computer at the time. You invited me to have a look at the computer. And I guess you already knew that I really liked aviation. And you are the person that introduced me to Flight Simulator.
So makes me so proud.
Yes, so
you told me the first time in a private conversation 2 weeks ago, and it's, I don't know, I didn't know about this, not at all.
Yeah, because you had your Amiga and you showed me it was F-18 Interceptor. And it was the first time I really got to see what computers can do, because, I mean, of course, if you compare it with today, it's laughable. But back then, this was amazing. You could just take off and land. There were carrier landings, if I remember correctly. And you had all the instruments that worked, and you had freedom in three dimensions, so you could fly around and, you know, have a look at the scenery. And I had never, ever seen anything like that before. So it was it was an experience that really set the tone for me in terms of, you know, I got really interested, and I thought, wow, this looks like something I want to do as well.
You were interested in aviation. But I think back then, correct me when in the late 90s and early 90s, uncorrected vision rules, I think they were stricter. You said in school, this was one of your don't know mantras, that with eyeglasses and also this was just a normal, so to say, what people said, with eyeglasses, it's impossible to get into an airliner cockpit or something like this.
Yeah, exactly. That used to be the wisdom, that if you have glasses, you cannot fly planes. Of course, today, that's no longer the case. As long as you fulfill certain criteria, really, it's not a problem. But, you know, we talked about this in, I think it was episode one, or later on again, where it just seemed, becoming a pilot seemed very unattainable. It was just a very, you know, what little kids would say, I want to be an astronaut, I want to be this, I want to be that. So in my mind, I don't think I ever thought this would ever really happen, you know. So flying on a computer was the next best thing for me. And I can't remember how long we spent on F-18 Interceptor, but it seemed like a long time, because we did a lot of stuff on there, a lot of nonsense from what I remember. But it was a lot of fun. And I thought, you know what, if I can't do this in the real world, then maybe this is an amazing substitute.
So this was really somehow an episode my brain almost, I mean, I remember this afternoon with you, but afterwards, were you also in Amiga? Maybe this was also the last year in school. I don't know. It was, as I said, maybe it was also a year later. This is really a little bit, my mind is here. I don't have diaries from back then. But you were starting to flying in the Amiga 2, or what happened afterwards?
Yes. So I think this was 1 year before you and I went our separate separate ways in terms of schools, because a year later there was a guy who went to school with me, and he had an Amiga 500, but he replaced it with an Amiga 2000, and he was kind enough to give me his old PC, and it came with some games, and F-18 Interceptor was one of them. So that's how I got a computer with that software. And of course, I immediately jumped in, but the problem was there was no internet, you know, there was nobody to guide you and help you. So at the beginning, I struggled a lot because it's a huge, steep learning curve if you really know absolutely nothing about flying, you know. So for me, the initial, how can I say, the initial introduction to flight simming was, I wouldn't say frustrating, but it showed me that there's a lot to it than, you know, just pushing buttons.
Yeah, and it still is. I mean, it's somehow, we talked about this in a minute before we went on tape today or live on tape today, but it is still, I don't know, the graphics are much better, everything is much more realistic, but the gameplay back then was, yeah, it was, at least it was also super challenging. Was it as realistic as nowadays? No, but, or at least not if you compare it certainly with really, really high-end simulations like the X-Plane or Flight Simulation or Aerofly, but core idea, or this, what did you just say before, this sandbox, so mind sandbox or something like this, it's still, yeah, it was challenging also back then.
Yeah, absolutely. I got another flight simulator later on, which I think it was just called Flight Simulator 1.something. It was a port from another platform, and that thing I just couldn't, I didn't even know what was going on. There were so many things you had to do, you know, with the flaps and everything. And even though it was just a Cessna, it would completely overwhelm me. Like I said before, there was no internet. There was nobody you could just ask. You know, you couldn't just go into a forum or watch a YouTube video to explain anything to you. You were just on your own and you had to figure this out yourself. There was a point where I think I started buying magazines, PC magazines, because they sometimes had very helpful, you know, articles about certain products with good tips. And also they often came with, at the beginning, I think it was still floppy disks, and later on then CDs with some free software. So that then helped me a lot to, you know, get to grips with all that stuff. But at the beginning, I was on my own, and I didn't know anyone else who was interested in flight simming, who used an Amiga. So the learning curve was very steep. I mean, imagine today you buy yourself a high fidelity airliner from, I don't know, TFDI, PMDG, Phoenix, and you install it, and without asking anyone, without internet, you're not allowed to use anything. You need to figure out how to get this into the air without any prior knowledge. I mean, it's yeah. So that gives you an idea what it was like. I mean, you were in the same boat as I was, right? There were no tutors. There was no YouTube. You just had to figure this out yourself.
I mean, I think the aviation challenge which I finally succeeded of my life back then, and still is, maybe it was just crazy, was this Celion A320. It was an Amiga magazine. I think it was the game of the month, and I had to have it. And I have sent you photos. I still have the manuals here, and it came with ALS approach charts and Jeppesen high and root charts. And I was just, you know, this looked for me like, what is this? How can I? And to master finally really a flight with the lowest cloud setting, I don't know, was it 1,000 feet or something like this, and fly, let's say, from Berlin to Zurich or stuff like this. This was so amazing, and it was, but yeah, if you know, you have to find out somehow how does this VOR and ILS and what's an NDB and what, okay, there is the needle and then woof, the needle to the other, and what happened? And now, you know, you start thinking and what, how can I, and you know, often accidentally you, it's really trial and error. You hunt this needle and okay, this is this, and maybe, but maybe also the playful teenage brain was here of an advantage for me. And it's yeah, as I said, this also set, so to say, the foundation for all that came later on. You know, the more sophisticated flying, which will be part of the, or which we will talk about in the second part of this flight simulation special. But this was really also for me back then, and I think it still is. I mean, to cover, to build some bridges from retro to now, landing approaches on aircraft carriers, whatever platform you fly, there are several simulators out there who can offer you this adventure. Do it, go for it. It's perfect. It's get an F-18 or whatever, and or an F-14, you know, retro Top Gun, and go into a flight simulator, and go to land on a carrier. It's great. Also carrier takeoffs. And I don't know what you think of the idea. Maybe it's super retro to fly with old school high-end route charts. But I, later on in the years, and I think you still can, I found them super cheap on eBay. And yeah, it's, I have a whole, if my library here is, I got a whole flight simulation library. And I think to build your adventures, it's also a part of the software. It's part of the game to play, to keep playful and also adventurous. And in the flight simulation, certainly, there is no real danger. The worst thing that can happen is, boom, you've been crashed. Yeah, okay, restart.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's actually crazy how, when you look back, how quickly it went from a few pixels to a proper cockpit with charts, and how quickly it went from a very simple concept. I remember, I think it was a friend of mine, he had a Commodore 64. He had a game where you would be flying planes, but they were literally paper planes, and you had no instrumentation. You would just fly around. It was like really, really basic. Like the paper planes were literally triangles. And within a few years, I mean, really not that long, we went from that to what you just described, you know, an A320 simulator with charts, approach charts, working ILS.
But this was 1991. This is incredible. I mean, yeah. These were two Amiga 500 floppy disks with 880 kilobytes each. And the Amiga had 1 megabyte RAM.
yeah, exactly. I got to be honest.
Celion, this was really benchmark. It was just a great software. It's, cannot say more than this.
Yeah, I got to be honest, at that time I was a bit overwhelmed with it all because it changed so much, and it every new sim brought so many new things. For me personally, the where everything came together was a bit later with Microsoft Flight Simulator 98. I don't know if you remember that. When that came out, I bought it on DVD, I think it was back then. It came on CD, it came on several CDs. And that was the first platform where it felt like there was a bit of a community. There were magazines that explained stuff. And I finally, and also it was a platform that came with tutorials, landing tutorials, takeoff tutorials. And that was the first platform that sort of took my hand and slowly introduced me into more and more complex flying. Because I did it before on other platforms, like we just said, I already knew some of the stuff, but this was really my way into proper simming. That was when it clicked for me. And since then, I've bought, you know, not just Microsoft. I own X-Plane, I have DCS, I have Aerofly. You know, if it has planes in it, I usually buy it. So I don't know, was there a sim for you where everything came together? Was it the 320, or was it earlier or later?
No game taught me so much about real-world flying than the Thalion A320. I just can say what this company made back then on the Amiga, available also with these charts and everything. I mean, the whole package was for me. At first, I was thinking, what is this? Do I have to be a pilot now? And I think it took me quite a while. But yeah, from there on, it was the other sims. They were great, but they were relatively easy to adapt. So the learning curve of the A320 was just immense, because from that time on, I was able to fly instruments. And as you know, Stefan, once you can fly instruments, you can fly instruments, you know. You have the knowledge and can relatively easily transfer it from one flight to the other. Okay, you have maybe to learn a new instrument or a new click spot, and certainly with the PMDGs and everything, this was the next level. But I think for a decade, almost, I was fine with the knowledge I had or the foundation from the AC-20. But what happened with me next, there was a 286 PC. This came in 1991 with a VGA graphics card. Yeah, this was the start of my Microsoft Flight Simulator career, so to say. There was this Microsoft Flight Simulator 4, I think it was, with the aircraft and scenery designer. And yeah, this was certainly the next level of also general aviation flying. And I remember back then, I think this is still possible. I mean, nowadays there are special simulators for them. But I talked in the premiere episode about my RC plane teenage years. I could simulate the RC planes relatively well, because I put myself into the tower or on the ground and flew the plane from outside. And it's a little bit tricky, because when the RC plane is flying towards the pilot, the aileron and everything is the opposite way. You know, you always point, so to say, to put the joystick in a direction where you want to have the wing up and something. I made my mind, you know, I was really able to train for the RC plane in the flight sim. And it was at least the basics. They worked certainly. Flying in reality is always a complete other thing. But I could master the basics in the flight sim. And this was thanks to the PC. And in these years, I had the Amiga and the PC parallel on the table. And the main reason why I kept the Amiga was the A320.
Oh, that's super interesting. I never thought about this RC thing. I have never owned a remote-controlled aircraft. But you're right. If you fly towards yourself, everything is reversed. I'm pretty sure I would be really bad at this, because now, after decades of flying, you know, normally with nothing reversed.
All I can say is I warn you, there is a slight difference between flying an A320 in real world and an RC plane on the beach.
Yeah, everything is reversed when you land. Well, that's nice.
Not only this, please take an instructor with you. It's your family would be afterwards really mad about me. Why didn't you warn Stefan? 1,000 euro.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, no, I don't think I would. Oh my God, I think if you invest that much time and money in a plane that you built and everything, I'll be so scared that it crashes. I probably would rarely fly it, if ever. Anyway, so it's nice to hear that it started very early for you. I mean, one of the things. I actually forgot about that. I also had a PC after the Amiga, and I think it was a 4, 486, something like that, or 286.
Wow.
And
1 megabyte RAM, maybe. Yeah. Or 8. Wow.
And that also had a flight simulator already from Microsoft. And the crazy thing was, Microsoft Flight Simulator has been around longer than Windows. Because when I had my first Microsoft Flight Simulator, there wasn't even Windows. You had to type in all the commands to start the game. So it's crazy to think how long simulators have been around, especially flight simulators.
I have another, so to say, the book, one of the books that made me a flight sim pilot, just in my head. It's Microsoft Flight Simulator 5.1, the realistic flight adventure. I translate here a little bit, so to say, on the fly, for literally speaking, for an English podcast. And on page one, there is version 5.1 for MS-DOS systems. Okay, no Windows.
No, there was no Windows back then. Yeah, if you think about it, Microsoft Flight Simulator is older than Windows, which is pretty insane, huh? Yeah, but I have to say it was a great time. Also, it has to be said, it was a lot cheaper than it is today. You know, there was no such thing as you had to buy an aircraft for 120 euros or something like that. That didn't exist.
No, but I have to be a little bit nerdy. There was a Windows before we. But feel free to comment us in the YouTube channel. I'm looking forward to be also corrected with my nerdiness and everything here. If something is incorrect, what I said in this episode about my retro, you know, memory from back then, but this was started in MS-DOS, but there was a window on this PC because it was, I think it came out in 1995, so this was years later.
Mm-hmm.
But this was already the next version after this RC plane training simulator I flew back then.
Right.
And there is your Windows 98 came certainly in 1997, when this is correct. Something like this.
Yes, that's true. Flight Simulator 98 was already on Windows. I remember that. So that made a huge difference. It made it a lot more user-friendly. And there was before that was 95, Microsoft Flight Simulator 95. Somehow, I don't know, I never got to grips with that one. Excuse me. I never got to grips with that one, but 98, I don't know why, something clicked. And I also, at least in my mind, it was the first one that had a huge following, a big community, and lots of people creating freeware and payware. And all of a sudden, you didn't just need the sim, you didn't just have the sim. You could go out and buy aircraft and airports and... You could, you know, I could all of a sudden
fly. There was the internet.
Yes, it was the early days of the internet. But also, I remember going to MediaMarkt or Saturn, and they had like all these CDs of Concorde and, I don't know, 747. So all of a sudden, it had become a hobby. And it sort of seemed to move from a tiny, tiny niche into something much bigger. And also, it has to be said, at that time, I joined the real aviation world. I was cabin crew at the time. And I remember I could just ask the pilots, so how do I do this? How do you fly an ILS? And they would just explain it to me. And that, of course, helped a lot as well. Yeah, for me, that's when it really started. I think until then, I would call it experimenting and having fun. But that was the moment when, for me, for the first time, I would understand what is an ILS. How do you fly this? You know, how do you fly a SID? How do you fly a STAR? How do you navigate? All that stuff. How do you program the autopilot? And this is when it all started for me. Since then, I've been learning ever since. Every single time a new aircraft comes out, I try to learn. I try to read up on the procedures. Like now, in 2026, just now, TFDI have launched a new MD-11. I've just spent the whole afternoon reading up on all the systems, how it all works. And to me, that's actually a cool parts about the hobby. It teaches you so much, and it teaches you so many different things about different aircraft. If you're into that, then it's pretty amazing.
Mm. Yeah, I just have here the table in my hand. It's Flight Sim 5.1 was 1995, then 1996 Flight Sim for Windows 95, then 1997 Flight Sim 98, if this is correct. And in the second episode, I want to jump into my more, so to say, sophisticated flying career, which started definitely with Flight Simulator 2000. Which was published, if this is, as I said, if this paper in my hand is correct, in 1999.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember this because what Microsoft did, they would launch a new flight sim every other year, and they would always name it for the next year. So I think, if I remember correctly, they would always launch it at the end of a year and name it for the next year. Exactly. It
looks like this. Yeah. If I watch this table here, makes sense. Makes sense.
And they did this all the way up to FSX, and then they stopped. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, one last question.
Yeah.
You talked about DCS, and we spoke a lot about F-18s and carrier landing.
Yeah.
How is it to land a F-18 in DSC, or sorry, in DSC was it?
DCS. It's very
DCS,
difficult.
DCS. Sorry. For mix, so many letters here, sorry.
I know. It's very difficult. Have you ever tried it?
VOR and NDB and FS. Yeah.
I know.
Next to my question, how is it nowadays to land? You even have, I think, virtual reality. How is it nowadays to land really in a high sophisticated simulator, an F-18 on a carrier?
It's very difficult. I have a lot of respect for Navy pilots. It's you know, you're landing on a moving target because the ship is obviously moving and it's swaying left and right, and it's usually quite windy. The approach is completely different to what you would do in an airliner. There's no flare, no nothing. The runway is extremely short and narrow, so it is a challenge, but when you get it done, it's actually a lot of fun. You can actually do it also in Microsoft Flight Simulator. There's a module that places that will place aircraft carriers in the world, and you can purchase F-14, F-18 for Microsoft Flight Simulator. I have the F-14, which I really enjoy, and with those you can also do carrier landings, which is also a lot of fun. One thing I've never managed to do is a carrier landing at night, which seems to be impossible.
Wow. I just have seen big pictures of this. But you're right. I have seen a YouTube movie about this add-on for Microsoft Flight Simulator. It looks amazing.
Yeah, it is cool. I got the module and I played around with it for a bit, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, but it's just the way it works is just so different from the airliners. They have a guidance system like an ILS, but from what I remember correctly, it's reversed. So you know, the all the indications are exactly the opposite of an airliner, and with me, my brain being so trained on how this should work, I always give the wrong inputs because my brain is just so trained on how an ILS should work, and I always flare. It's an automatic thing, which you shouldn't do with an F-18, you know, just slam it into the ground. Anyway, it's I would say it's a challenge, but if you master it, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think we gave some retro insights plus, so to say, real-world connections today. I hope you liked it. Your comments are welcome in the comment section of our YouTube channel. Also, aviation@aviation-questcc is our email address. Certainly, we got a homepage. It's aviation-quest.cc. We'd also like to interview more people. So if you think you'd be a guest for a show or know somebody amongst your friends who would be able to or willing to give us an interview, just write. Would be great. And Stefan, what do you think? Should we leave it now? I mean, we could talk like this, I think, until midnight, but...
Yes, yeah. I think just leave it at... to me, it was a great time. You know, like I said, it was a bit confusing because it seemed all very new and complex. But I think it was the time when the first seeds were put into my brain that this could be a nice hobby. And I'm glad I met you that afternoon and you showed it to me, because it really opened my eyes to what is possible if you have a computer at home.
Yeah, I think we should continue on in episode 2 of this, or in the second part of this Flight Sim special. And if you got more than curious about this, I just can say check out Stefan's YouTube channel, FS Clips, maybe some others. There are a lot of Flight Sim videos out there. Just Google for the names and of the Flight Sims we mentioned in this episode. Maybe not. You can also find some retro videos, but they will definitely lead you straight forward to the newer versions. And maybe also for you, a nice hobby to join in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well worth it. And, don't be worried about the struggle and the learning curve. In the end, it's really worth it.
Thank you, Stefan. And yeah, we will continue in the next podcast.
Yes. Thank you, Jürgen. As always, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And have a good day and speak to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Aviation Quest CC, Stories from Above. For more information about this episode and everything we do, visit our homepage aviation-quest.cc. We appreciate your time and support, and we'd love to have you back for the next episode. Until then, stay safe, stay curious, and keep your passion for aviation flying high.